Welcome back to the R-Rated Podcast. The R-Rated Podcast. This week's guest is...
Welcome back to the R-Rated Podcast. We have officially reached the end of season three, which is absolutely wild to say, just because it really doesn't feel like that long ago when I was just saying, welcome to season three, and now we're already at the final episode, the end. Usually I would have, you know, a guest joining me, but I really wanted to talk to you guys by myself because I feel like it's been such a long time since I had a solo episode. And I've had so many great guests that it was just too much pressure to pick one guest for the finale, because I'm like, I don't know like who that should be, just because I've met so many great people on this podcast and just in general. So I have a lot of surprises for the upcoming season, and I'm really excited to share that with you guys. But I think we need to kind of go through this year and break it down and kind of recap season three. Not only did we start season three in Austria with two lovely guests, one being Teresa Eschbacher, who is a writer, DP, director. She's worked for producers. She's literally done it all. Then we also had a familiar last name, my dad, who was in Austria as well, who's directed several things, all the way to having Michael Hisrick, a famous Shameless producer, ER West Wing. Amazing guests to celebrate my 100th episode. Then we've had actors who've worked on, you know, Salem. We've had professional photographers who shot for The Iron Claw, which is coming out soon. We've had people who've done sound for years and have, you know, immense amount of sound engineering experience and how to really get that clear, crisp sound, because we know how important that is on set. We've had people who are influencers on this season. We've had costume designers, we have special effects, we've had all kinds of different roles. So I hope that you guys got all the insight that you guys wanted this season and more, hopefully. Not only did the film industry experience like a big, crazy shift because of the pandemic, which you guys already kind of know about because I was managing the COVID department for Fatal. So I kept telling you guys all these different updates on like what was going on and how the industry was adapting to that. And we did. The film industry really did adapt to all the necessary things it needed to keep shooting in the pandemic. But what we didn't see coming was an 8-month strike. So I don't know how many people have actually ever experienced a work strike. For me, this was my first time. I had never had a job that went on strike. So this was a very new experience to me. You know, I didn't really know what to expect, how long it was going to be, and like what exactly, you know, everybody was striking for. Some people were striking for different things. You know, there was two major departments that were striking. First, it was the writer's strike. And after, you know, I don't know, like 6 months of striking, they finally got what, you know, they wanted. I don't know if it's fully exactly 100%, but they were able to negotiate some things and, you know, both parties were happy. But for the actor strike, it wasn't as smooth, I would say, as the writer's strike. They definitely had to fight a little bit more for what they wanted. It was a lot of back and forth and, you know, it was kind of like take it or leave it situations from both parties, which, you know, that was the first time I ever experienced that. And I'm sure some people who've been around longer in the industry can tell you like, oh, you know, this is the second strike we've been through or third in our lifetime. But for me, I'm speaking from my experience, this was something I never saw coming. You know, like you hear rumors about it, like, yeah, there might be a potential strike, but it takes a lot to get that started. Like you can't just, you know, group text, you know, your friends in the industry be like, let's all strike tomorrow. Like it has to be a huge thing where everybody is involved and, you know, shares the same ideas as you and wants to fight for the same rights and freedom and benefits and all that. So it was really interesting to see all that happen. And I've learned so much. So initially when the writers went on strike, I think back in like May of this year, you know, it was like, oh, like how long is this going to take? Like maybe it'll only take a few weeks or a month. But I think they were such an inspiration in the industry because they really fought for what they wanted and what they believed in. You know, writers' rooms were getting smaller and smaller, but they were still demanding the same amount of work. You know, some writers weren't getting credit where credit should have been, you know, given. And as crazy and scary as the situation was, you have to have these types of moments and situations so that change can happen. And I know, you know, people might be like, oh, but like, you guys are just acting privileged or whatever. But that's because you don't really understand what they're really asking and what's really going on set. So that's why I was I really just wanted to shine light on why people were striking and what they were striking for. So I know in some of my like earlier episodes, I talked about it a little bit, but then it's been so long since, and now I can finally say like both strikes are over. People are going back to work. What they were striking for example, the writers were striking for bigger writer rooms, letting newer writers join the writing room. So it's not just like, oh, you don't have like years of experience that working on a major hit show, like you're never going to see a writer's room. They're still like, okay, you have to hire like a beginner writer. Obviously, they know how to write a script and everything, but you know, they haven't seen a big studio set. Like they haven't like written for a big studio. So you're still letting these new writers have opportunities and enter a writer's room because eventually, like, yes, like you want to have seasoned people who've been on there forever, but eventually those people are going to retire. So it's like, what are you going to do when they retire? You have to have these new people who are writers, you know how to fill those shoes. So it's like, if you have them come in when they're, you know, still maybe beginners, I'm putting air quotes for beginners because obviously these writers still know how to write. It's just that they've never been in a writer's room, you know, for a studio. But it's like, you need those people because they will learn and eventually they will fill those bigger shoes. So, you know, it's great to see that that's going to be in the future. We're going to have writer's rooms with, you know, different levels of writers. That way it's not just like, oh, only these people or only if you've done this can you get in. Very exciting to hear. And also writers getting credit for the things they actually wrote is huge. I know it sounds ridiculous. Like you would just be like, that should be expected. Believe it or not, it wasn't. So it's good to see a change in that. For the actors, for example, it's a little bit different because I know the whole big problem was the AI thing. So I think what happened was we were all just worried, you know, like the actors are worried. Like, of course, we don't want to be, you know, scanned one time and then that's it. And you can just do whatever the fuck you want with it. Like, let's be real. That's scary. So it's good that the actors stood up for themselves and really were like, you know, this can't happen. Or like, you know, you can use AI for like specific small roles that maybe you can't because someone maybe passed away. Like there has to be a reason for it. Like it shouldn't just be like a transaction of like, let me buy your face and let me do whatever I want with it. It takes away the magic and the beauty of filmmaking and why you even cast certain roles. Because imagine just casting someone and you're like, oh yeah, but that's like the AI version of them. Like that would just be like less interesting. It's like, why didn't you use like their actual, you know, actual person? I don't think we need to be using AI to such an extreme just yet. I think there's going to be a lot of tools that we can benefit from, but everything at moderation, you know, like if you overdo anything, it can be bad or dangerous or not good, right? So I really think that we have to learn to work with AI, but there has to be boundaries and rules with everything. So I think it would be too naive to think like, oh, like, you know, AI will never be in the film industry. Like, no, of course it will be. We already see it. You know, people are already writing some scripts with AI. I don't know how good it is because, you know, AI doesn't really have emotions, but I'm sure there's going to be newer, you know, updates to all these things where eventually they can detect emotion too, or you can like teach it how, like, you know, it's like, let's be real, like, let's open our brains up to the most possible situation. And it's like, think about when Google first came out. Like, I'm sure that was shocking. Like, you can ask Google anything and it will tell you. Like, you can log in and then just ask, like, oh, like, why does the, you know, why can you only see stars at night? You know, whatever the question is, you know, Google has an answer. And I'm sure that was like shocking and scary for everyone when that first came out. It's like, what, like the internet, like we're gonna let Google tell us everything? And so I think this is just one of those moments again in time and in our generation and life is like, we are just constantly evolving and adapting. And unfortunately, like, we live in a time where you have to adapt and things are, you know, you have to go with the change or else you will be left behind and you can't really be outdated by yourself. You know, I know it sounds a little bit, you know, blunt and out there, like, oh shit, like, what? But it's the truth. Like, we're constantly changing things up and it's like, do you go with it or do you stay behind? I'm sure, like, you know, there's parts that you can control it, right? You don't have to let it like control your whole life, but I'm saying like, just learn it, see what you're working with. And that's kind of how I feel with the whole AI situation is like, don't be afraid of it, but don't let it take over everything, you know, like I think there can be a world where you can work with it at moderation. I know this might get a little bit of hate because people are afraid of AI, but I think it's better to be realistic than sit here and be like, well, no, I don't think so. Because I do see it more and more. And I know that people are using it. And, you know, I think people are afraid to say out loud, like, hey, I'm using the help of AI with certain things because of the backlash they would get and because of the negativity that would come with it. But I'm really curious to see how it can help the industry in a positive way and not in a negative way take away jobs. So I think like if we can meet that medium where it's like we don't have to be afraid of it taking our jobs, but we can learn from it and have it do things that would take us like a long time. For example, I did go to a event where someone spoke about AI and the future and what it can do in the industry. And I thought it was very interesting because a lot of people who have worked in the industry for years, you know, they're very afraid of this. And I get why, like, you know, you're used to things working a certain way and like you're used to, you know, highlighting everything in a script, like what you have to get done, like a breakdown, you know, like for example, a production designer, you know, they're not just, you know, looking at a script once and it's like, okay, like we're gonna, like you're highlighting every single page, every scene. You need to know exactly what's going on because you need to know what the actor is going to need, like what prop, like, you know, what room are they in? They have to set design everything. So for example, a production designer is going through a whole script and highlighting all these things. Like this is a prop, this is set design. And so a thing that I heard at this presentation, at this art night thing that I went to, this event, this person was saying, you know, there's going to be a software that can help with that. For example, when you have a script and you're like still in the developing stages of pre-production, and let's say you type in like, hey, highlight all the things that are considered a prop. And so it highlights everything that could be a prop in that scene throughout the whole script. Yes, it's a little scary that, you know, something that would take you hours to do would take, you know, could be done in a couple seconds, maybe a minute. Yes, that's a little scary. But think about how much time you would save on something like that. And you can use that time to the time that you would spend, you know, highlighting, going through the script on something else that would take just as long or something that's more important or whatever, you know. It's more about working with it in like a appropriate way than it just you just being lazy and being like, well, just do my whole work, like do my whole job. No, that's not what I'm supporting. I'm supporting being efficient. And if this can help you, you know, knock something out of the way so that you can work and put more time into something else that tends to take longer or maybe even be more important, whatever it is, like I think I can support something like that because it's like we're always looking at ways to be time efficient, and especially on set, like, you know, we already have such long days. And I think having a tool that can help speed things up, not take away jobs, but help you be more efficient and speed things up in the way that you do things, I don't see the harm in that. I do see, like, you know, the potential if it, you know, taking jobs for like background actors or even main actors because they're like, oh, we don't want to pay you. We just want to scan your face and like, you know, do what we want with it. That's a little fishy to me. That's weird. That we need to like check a little bit more. But things like this, like when it can help with, you know, just the busy work of things and it's not like you're cheating or taking ideas from something. Like if I was like, oh, you know, write me a script and base it off of like this movie. I don't know. Like that's kind of like a fine line of like, is that plagiarizing? Is that like, is the internet taking, you know, work from other people that is online that they can access. That might be a little bit too much, you know, for a creative person. But I think when it comes to just being efficient and quick, these are some tools that we could be open to using. You know, another example could be, for example, you have a script, but you don't know who would be a good person to cast. You know, there's like a couple options. You have this person in mind, but you know, what this software could do is possibly help you find the right cast member. And by doing so, you know, it can pull up, for example, the characters, let's say it's me, you know, like, let's say we need someone of like a Latin descent or like someone of a brown color, you know, she's a podcast host and she is, you know, the scene is like, you know, opening up with a podcast studio and this girl with like dark brown hair is speaking about her podcast, blah, blah. Okay. So the role is me, whatever. You know, who would we cast to play me? But for example, you could type in, you know, this is what I'm looking for. And then they can start giving examples. Like, let's say, not saying that I look like any of these people, but these are some options that maybe AI would come up with. Maybe it could be Priyanka Chopra, Nick Jonas's wife. Like maybe she could be one of the, you know, like leads, right? And it like shows her in like the outfit maybe that you wrote out or whatever, you know, like a picture. Or it could be Shay Mitchell. I'm just thinking of tan girls that like I'm like no specific, or I'm just naming out people. It could be, you know, Jenna Ortega. It could be Halle Bailey. Like it could just be anyone that like comes to mind that fits the description, whatever. And if maybe they come up with a good idea and you're like, you know what, that actually would be a good person to cast. Now you have more ideas than just like the two people that came to your mind. Not saying that, you know, this is the way we should do castings now and like AI should pick everything. No, not saying that. I'm just saying that if this is a tool that can help you going forward and it can, you know, make things more efficient, then why not? Maybe it can even broaden your reach. Maybe because you don't know all the actors ever out there, right? You know, if AI has access to all the things that is on the internet, it could find a lot of different actors and not just the same, you know, 10 actors that are popular of that year and that keep getting recycled in all the movies. And, you know, maybe it's even finding actors that haven't had that much popularity or big roles and we can give it to actors in that capacity. So I think it's a very interesting topic. I think it's, you can't really write it off just yet and you can't really jump into it full force because we still have to like learn more about it, study it more, see how it really operates, how accurate it is. You know, sometimes a lot of these new platforms that are AI driven, there's so many of them now, but like, I'm sure that they have like their beta run, you know, this is like a tester, like it could be better if we do this or that. So I'm sure as it's learning, we're learning with it as well, because we can see what it can do and at what capacity it can do it without really overstepping its boundaries. It's a trip to even like talk about this because I feel like, you know, in the beginning of the season, this wasn't even in the conversation. And now like towards the end of the season, it's like, this is all that's been talked about because this is something that they've been fighting for months, like 8 months or more. So now that the strike is over, I want to go over some things that the actors were able to, oh, there's my little prince. Say hi to my little dog. He wanted to join us on the podcast today. Let's start with the minimum compensation increase. So we kept seeing a lot of like residual checks and there were like, you know, a couple cents, something really, really low. And people were like really shocked by that. Like, especially people who didn't work in the industry. They were like, wait, what? Not all actors are millionaires? Believe it or not, they're not. Because if you're not in the top like 10% of actors, who's like, you know, making on these big, you know, movies like Barbie or something, you're not necessarily going to be making that much money. And at least before, we used to make money off of, you know, it being reruns and getting, you know, every time somebody would watch something, you would get like a residual check. But a lot of that changed with streaming, which we, you know, like there's a love-hate relationship with streaming because I love how easy it is to watch whatever you want, but at the same time, it's also it just has changed so many things. Like, I feel like movie theaters aren't the same thing anymore because people are like, well, I'll just wait for it to go on streaming. So I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it, to be honest. I know a lot of people love having every streaming platform, but I also think it's more complicated because it's like you have to have all these subscriptions to all these different things to watch this and that. And it's not just like all in one bubble, which maybe in the future that will happen. We will have a streaming platform that will have just, it's like a big hub where all the other ones are just in it. And you just kind of pay like a one-time fee versus paying 20 here, paying 18 there, paying whatever there. You know what I mean? So one of the things that the actors were striking for was just a compensation increase. And one of those increases is now up to 7%. So I think that's, you know, it's a step in the right direction. I don't know what they initially were going for, but 7% pay increase, I would say it's pretty good. I think it will go up as the years go on. I think it's like something like the initial pay hike is like followed by 4% in like July of 2024 and then another 3.5 the following year. So I'm very curious to see how this will change things. So for any of my actor friends who are, you know, getting this little pay increase, let us know how much this changes your paycheck and how you can survive off this. Because a lot of the reason why this was a big deal is because you can't survive off just an actor's income, right? And that's hard when you're an actor and this is your full-time job and you can't survive off your full-time job. That's an immense amount of stress. Like, I don't think people realize like how much stress that really is. Like, imagine having a job that you go to every single day and you work all these long hours and you still can't afford to pay for your stuff. It's scary. It's not like a common thing. I know there's some jobs out there that are like that, you know, some people have to work two or three jobs. But when living in California, such an expensive area, you want to have a job that can just pay for the minimal stuff. Like, I'm not saying like this, oh, like it's not funding like all these travel, like, you know, excursions or whatever, like all this fine dining. No, like I'm just talking about like paying rent, paying for your groceries, paying for gas, paying for all these things. Like, you should be able to pay that with, you know, your everyday job. So when you can't, it's hard. It's depressing. It makes you feel like, why am I not being appreciated? Like, I know the studio has all this money, but where's the money going to? You know, I think it should be equally distributed for all the people that are doing work and not just like the people that are high up. Like, obviously we need the people that are high up to get things rolling and get everything situated. But remember, it takes all the people at the bottom to also get this going. And when I say people at the bottom, it's just because there's this like silly hierarchy thing. But also, let's not forget, you need a whole team of people to do things. And the more and more sets that I go on, I've been seeing that, like, you know, like they are starting to appreciate their whole cast and crew. There's also some that don't. And unfortunately, those people will have to learn the hard way. But there's good and bad to every industry. It wouldn't be realistic for me to sit here and be like, oh, like everything's always perfect. No, of course you see a little bit of everything. But the difference is that the industry that I'm in, the film industry, is trying to make a difference and change, you know, what they've been doing wrong. And I think that goes such a long way, is people taking accountability and people taking action when things aren't going right. So another thing that the actors were striking for were streaming bonuses. So the new contract calls for actors to earn a success payment, which is residual payments. So if they work on a streaming project that attracts a significant number of viewers, they will be getting paid now by the runtime of the show or the movie or the series. And that will be determined like how many domestic views they're getting. And that's kind of like how the success metric is going to be calculated, is just by domestic views. At first, we weren't seeing those residual checks, and the residual checks were super, super, super low. So it's important to praise the actors that are doing well, because a lot of these shows wouldn't be doing well if we didn't have these amazing actors. So I think it's really important to give credit where credit is due. So I'm happy that this is something they could come to agreement on. I know it wasn't easy. It was a long back and forth fight, but if a show does well and you get a lot of views on your show, to get like a little percentage off that as an actor, I think that's huge. So I'm happy we're seeing some change. Obviously, it's not like a big drastic change, because I'm sure there's going to be, you know, like some, there's, I'm sure something comes with it, right? It's like you have to hit a certain amount of numbers or viewers or whatever. So we don't know exactly how many viewers you have to hit to get this like bonus residual thing, but at least we're speaking about it, right? It's in the vicinity. They also are getting disclosure of viewership statuses. So on high budget streaming productions, streaming producers will be required to disclose the total number of hours the content was streamed, both in the US and in Canada and abroad for each quarter. And that's intended to help actors determine if they're being fairly compensated related to the show's distribution and popularity. So obviously, you know, some shows do better in Europe, some shows do better in the United States. Sometimes shows don't even pop off until years after it was published, which is such a trip to me how sometimes a show can gain fame after. But it's possible. We've seen it all. Like, there's a lot of different shows that didn't do that well when they were out, but then went on to a streaming platform and like a ton of people started watching it. So I think this is a cool new way of kind of having that conversation with the studios and with your with the show that you're working on, is like, okay, like you're telling, instead of it being like, oh, you telling me one thing and I'm telling you another thing, it's like, let's just see the views, let the popularity, let the audience really speak for what we're fighting for here. And it's like, you can't deny when a show is doing well. So if a show is doing really well, you should get paid what you deserve. So another topic that was in negotiation between the studios and the actors, and that was probably the biggest commotion of them all, just because, you know, it was AI possibly scanning your face as an actor and then putting it out there. And, you know, they already paid you a big fee in the beginning just to like have your face so that they don't have to pay you later on or all that stuff. See, that's a little slimy. I don't like how they were trying to go about that. But luckily, with all this, you know, striking going on, which is why we do these types of things, is so we see a change. So basically, what they agreed on is limiting artificial intelligence. So film and TV producers, they have to obtain consent from actors to create and use their digital replicas. So, you know, if they are intended to be, you know, using something and have their like likeness, they have to go to the actor and they have to consent to that. They can't just like steal their likeness, which is good, but a little scary to think about. And actors are entitled to compensation at their usual rate for the number of days they would otherwise have been paid to do the work being performed by the digital replica. So what's kind of crazy is like they're saying like, all right, like we would prefer not for you to use AI as us, right, to replicate us. But if you do use AI to replicate us, you have to pay us each day that you're using, right? So it'd probably be like at least a 12-hour day, because that's how long shoot days are. This way you should still just use the actors instead of like trying to cheating them out of it and just use their AI, like, you know, their scan or whatever. So it's like, if you're gonna have to pay them the same rate anyway just for using them, might as well use the actual actor. And yes, they're trying to say like, oh no, like this is more for like, you know, for stunts, for example, when there's a dangerous stunt, we can just use AI. I see the point in that, but it's also like, well, now you're taking away jobs from stunt performers who literally live to do that kind of stuff. And they're like willing to do these stunts, right? Like, I get there's been some incidents and accidents while stunts have been performed that could have been avoided if it was CGI. For example, he actually had a major accident that disabled him from the waist, actually from the neck down. So that would have been a big scandal. And I think because it was such a big franchise, the stunt actor actually decided to not go ahead and you know, press charges and make it a big deal, because it would have taken away the magic of the Harry Potter film, which is a crazy, like, big thing to do, because I'm like, wow, like, this changed your life. But I also kind of understand where he's coming from. But yes, in situations like that, when they try to argue, like, okay, it would, you know, make it a safer set with, like, stunts and stuff like that. Yes, I could agree with that. But again, it's like, if it's something an actor or stunt actor could still do, I think we should still let him do it. Maybe if it's like one of those crazy tricks where they're jumping out of a plane, like the way that Tom Cruise does, even though Tom Cruise likes to do his own stunts. Yes, maybe that could be avoided with AI, but I'm gonna let the stunt actors handle that and let them tell me how they feel about that kind of situation. Another interesting topic that was talked a lot about was the number of background actors. So initially this whole AI thing was to kind of eliminate the background actors. I don't know if that was like their goal, is like eliminated all background actors, you know, coming our way. I don't think it was like that. It was more like, oh, we can save money on the budget if we have AI actors, you know, be the background actors instead of hiring, you know, 25 background actors, hiring 100, 250, however many you need in a scene. And yes, sometimes that does add up because you have to feed everybody, you have to pay them a day rate. So I can see how they're trying to save money, but also you still have to think about it. Like this is, there's a reason why we go on to set and want to create these films is because it's such a, like a human, human interactions are everything. And we're creating human life stories of what's going on in our world, what's happened to people and what people can relate to. So it's like, I think if you want to keep remaining to have these authentic real life situations, you have to have real people in them or else it's just going to lack that like touch and like the heart of it, right? It's just like, well, I can kind of like, it wasn't as meaningful basically. And now there's also relocation bonuses. So if performers have to relocate for work or, you know, go out of town or shoot overseas, they will be entitled for a maximum relocation benefit, which can be up to $5,000 a month or for 6 months, you know? So that's a 200% increase from the previous amount, which is crazy to think about. Like, imagine booking this giant role. And sometimes, like, I've had actors on here that had to move to, like, Louisiana in the middle of buttfuck nowhere. And you're telling me, like, not everything is compensated. Like, you're telling me that they don't have a little, like, allowance in this location where they don't know anybody and they're, like, changing their whole lives just to be on this, you know, be this role and be in this show and or movie or whatever it is. That's pretty crazy. I had no idea that, like, that wasn't like a given. Like there's just certain things that you would expect because there's other things that happen on set or in the industry where you're like, oh, we do that. And it's like no one bats an eye on that. But then like the things that you would be like, oh yeah, duh, like that should be, it's weird. It's like a weird dynamic. Obviously there's always hope for more. As the years go on, we see more change and more diversity, more, I mean, we've already been seeing more of a diversity in general, which I think has also come a long way, which is great. You know, we had the Me Too movement, but I think now there's a safer space of speaking up and being able to tell someone when they're being inappropriate. Or there was always that stigma of like, oh no, like I will never get hired again if I speak up for myself. But I think slowly we're creating this like safe space where you can. And I'm truly so inspired by everyone who went on strike. This showed me that when you really want something to change, that you can change it, but you have to do it, you know, together and really stand up for what you're going against and what you believe in. And I think if the writers and the actors didn't do this, nothing would have changed. We would have, you know, been seeing the same problems over and over and nobody would be doing anything about it. And we would just kind of like let it happen and be like, whatever, you know? So I'm just so inspired by all those people because I'm like, wow, like you guys showed me something that I never expected to, not that I didn't think it would work. I just had never seen it and experienced it. So to be able to see it firsthand, you know, I actually went to some of the strikes and I saw everybody showed up, you know, they were supporting each other. People were listening to each other. People all had the same thing in common. But I think 2024 is going to have a burst of content just because we've been on a dry spell for months at a time. So everybody's super eager to work. And for everyone who's waiting for me to talk about what I would possibly be working on, I know, it's been so long since I filled you guys in on anything that I was doing, but there's just been so many other interesting guests that I was like, we need to hear their story and we can circle back to me because, I mean, I had some things going on, but you know, I'm gonna be super straightforward. I think it's good that I take you guys on this like little journey because I wouldn't be real if I wasn't honest about like what I've been doing the last couple of months, especially during the strike. So initially, you know, I was trying to find something to more creative to jump into. And I thought like I was going to be hopping into something right away, but the strike, nobody was working, right? So I ended up going on unemployment, which was fine for a couple of months. I, you know, I was very lucky enough to be able to travel, and that was really eye-opening for me, just to be able to travel and see new places in the world and kind of just learn from people and their cultures. It made me realize that I want to be a director that goes all over the world and just films different stories and be able to document everything that's going on. I honestly see myself as a documentarian now. Like I really, that might be my new go-to thing. I've just had so much fun working on my own documentary and the possibilities of what else is out there. I'm so excited for that. But I was actually able to go to Japan with some of my friends. We shot a horror feature film where it starts off in Japan and then it will end up in Los Angeles and kind of continue there. So just being able to shoot that with your friends while traveling was just like so much fun because it was something that I didn't expect to do. Initially, it was just like, oh, we're all going to Japan at the same time. Like, let's meet up. And then it became a bigger thing where we're like, okay, well, if we're already in Japan, like we might as well, you know, use it to our advantage and try to like film a little story. So it was so much fun to be able to do that with my close friends and just share this magical moment and have it be documented and kind of just put a spin to it of, you know, being a filmmaker and being like, oh, let's do this and do that. The part that gets a little depressing was after all the traveling ended and all the fun things, I felt a little bit stuck. I'm not going to lie. The strike was still happening. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was like, I need to get off unemployment because it's just not enough money. I don't feel like I can really like do the things that I want to do. And I mean, everyone who really knows me knows I like to travel and I like to, you know, go do things that I want to do. And I don't mind working hard so that I can do those things. But when I was on unemployment, you know, you get a strict little, you know, allowance and that's just like not enough. So I was like, I need to find another job. Nothing on set was going on. I was checking Indeed all the time, every day. There was no new work. I was getting really down on myself. I want to just be really honest because, you know, everyone on social media or even when I come on here, I share all the good and exciting things. Like there's been some times where I share like the things that have been a little bit more difficult in my life, but I really want to just share where I was these last couple months because I don't think it would be fair to always just show like the good. Like you have to share a little bit of the bad and like when you feel stuck or down because that's what makes us relate to each other and that's what makes us human, right? So yeah, so I basically felt like I needed to find another job because unemployment wasn't paying enough. So I ended up getting this job as a receptionist. I know, not what I want to do, but like I said, needed to pay the bills. So I got this receptionist job for a company that I'm not going to name, but basically what I do there is I help rent out luxury motorhomes for celebrities for productions. And like I said, we're still on strike. So it wasn't any like shows or movies. It was mostly like music videos, commercial shoots, photo shoots. Because although the film industry was still on strike, those were still things that were being shot. Like music videos didn't really have anything to do with like the actor's strike. So they were still good to go. Like all the rappers were still shooting their videos. Photo shoots, it's not really anything to do with the actors and the writers, right? It's more like, you know, photo shoots for products or brands and stuff like that. So that still was, you know, active and alive. And commercials also. You have actors, but you know, commercial actors are a little bit different because you're only there for a day. So it wasn't in the same ballpark as a strike for like movie and TV actors. So it was a lot of those types of gigs. And so it was cool to see those types of projects still up and running. But yeah, it was weird to work in a job that basically caters around the film industry and projects running and productions and TV and film and for it to be so dry. But I also learned a lot because it kind of gave me another side, another insight of like how kind of like production, like a production office would work, right? You have to like call and organize things for all these people. it's not really what I want to do just because it's not like hands-on on set. But I did learn a lot and I worked with some great people and it taught me, you know, communication skills, a lot of, you know, answering the phone. So talking to different levels of people and writing emails a lot. You, believe it or not, like I actually didn't have to write a lot of emails in my time at school and in college. I mean, I went to film school, so it was more like, what project are we shooting? You know, like what camera are we using? That's more like what I was dealing with and thinking about versus like, oh, I have to write this email to this professor. So I was able to learn a lot about emails and, you know, that kind of stuff. And we ended up renting a lot of motorhomes to a lot of big clients, which was cool. But like I said, there were more like 1 to 2 day shoots. And so it kind of gave me a new appreciation to like all the experiences that I've had so far. And I really do believe everything does happen for a reason. You know, it wasn't maybe the right time for certain things. You know, I thought maybe I was going to be doing this or that during this time. And, you know, you never know what to expect. And I think that's something major working in the film industry is like, you really just never know what to expect. Things can happen and you just got to be ready for it. That's why this industry is such a make it or break it, because you will go into it with a plan and it will go exactly opposite of your plan. So it's like, how are you going to adapt? How are you going to, you know, function? How are you going to make it work? Like this year was just so unexpected. Like every time I thought I knew something or I was like, this is going to go this way, it didn't. And I thought I learned that like last year and 2 years ago when the pandemic hit, but no, this shit was way different. Like this was, oh my God. When I tell you there's been so much like stuff that like I was not expecting, I could sit here and write a book of all the things I didn't expect to happen this year that did. But you know what? I learned a lot. I know what to expect for next year. I'm even more motivated and driven for next year. I'm super excited. I think a lot of good things will happen just because there has been a good amount of, there has been a big break. So now everyone's freaking eager to get back on set, to work things out, to make sure everyone's happy and really get the shows and movies out there that we all love and want to see and relate to. So I think next year is going to come back with a bang. And I have some exciting news about next year. I will be starting a new job. I know I can't really say much about it. I should be back on set next year. That's all I can say. These bigger sets, you have to sign an NDA and you can't really speak about what you're working on just because you don't want things to get leaked. I mean, a great example was the Barbie movie, for example. When they were shooting, there was that one day where they knew that they were shooting at Venice Beach and it got exposed. And everybody like showed up there and they were like, paparazzi everywhere because they knew they were going to shoot there. Well, apparently the reason why they knew that is because they had an extra that posted it on TikTok and this extra exposed it. And then, of course, she got booted off the show. Not the show. She got booted off the movie. She couldn't be an extra anymore because she exposed confidential location. But when the time is right, I will be able to share that with you guys. But I'm so excited and I wanted to just share at least that I will be back on set next year and the dry spell will finally be over. And I hope that I will have all my projects ready to be released. That's the goal. I have a lot of things that are supposed to be coming out in 2024. So bear with me, guys. I really hope that you guys will enjoy everything. And I really hope that you guys just enjoyed season 3. I hope that you guys like the diversity in my guests and, you know, really expanding this into the entertainment industry and not just the film industry, because there's so many ways people can create. And I think there's going to be so many more ways in the future. So I just want to say thank you guys for tuning in for another, 38 episodes this season, a total of 128 episodes. And I'm sure you guys have missed a few. So if you have, please go check those out. Please subscribe to everything. But obviously, I want to bring you guys a season 4 with more guests, more insight, and more fun. I want to extend my gratitude for everybody who supported and listened and has joined me on the podcast. I could not have done it without you guys. And I'm so excited to keep doing this next year and have an even better season. And if you are interested in joining me on the podcast, feel free to DM me or shoot me an email on the rratedpodcastuncensored@gmail.com. And or you can always reach out on my website, rratedpodcast.com. There's a section where it says contact us. If you are interested in being a guest on the podcast or the new season, please message me. I am starting to get all that situated and started. So as a lovely season comes to an end, a new season is already brewing. So thank you guys so much for tuning in to every single episode, all 128 episodes. I appreciate you guys so much, and I can't wait for what's next. Happy end of season 3! Woo! We did it! Love you, R-rated gang. Thank you.